From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Welcome back. You see, I knew you couldn't say postcard from Pop Bread. It's Mark Gander, founder of the Consumer Action Group. Hello, Mark.
Hi there. Hi.
Hello. You sound, you're just so butch on the radio.
Well, I'm trying to put on some boost now.
If you start singing Barry White, I'm going to leave the studio.
Well, especially as you've told me that you're having to add 20 decibels to my voice to make it sound more butch and authoritative. I thought to help you along there, Eric.
Okay, so if I start playing the piano, you'll sing Barry White.
Oh, yes.
It's lucky I can't play the piano then. And I'm Eric Wiltshire over on the east side of Slovakia in the beautiful town of Poprad, hence we call Postcard from Poprad. Welcome to everybody wherever you happen to be. Don't forget, by the way, boys and girls, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do via our Facebook page, which is simply called Radio. That was rather lucky, wasn't it? Or you're very welcome to get in touch via your local station, who will forward on emails, as they regularly do, to us, and then we forget them, and then we have to do them the next week. Which reminds me, I should say hi to Marcus. Thank you very much for the nice message. And I am back, as you can hear now. I'm here, Marcus. He was a little bit concerned I wasn't there for a couple of weeks. Bless. Never mind.
Oh, nice.
I love this lady. The Duchess of Alba. I think she's amazing. Watched her on television. She's just got married again at the young age of 85 years, young in Seville. And there she was dancing a flamenco dance. Has to be said, her husband, who I think he's 24 years younger than her, was sort of standing there with his hand just on the edge of her elbow, not touching it, but just making sure she didn't fall over at that sort of delicate moment. And she was dressed to the nines, and why not, I asked myself. What's the matter with her? You know, people are going, she shouldn't have got married again because she's 85. Well, can somebody please tell me why?
Well, I'm not sure that that's what people are worried about, actually. I think that the real suspicion here, I think, is the story that her children are pretty suspicious, that maybe this man's marrying her. Mind you, I mean, he's what? That's right, he's 61, that maybe he's marrying her simply because then he may come in line for all the money and the children may be left without anything at all, which I suppose could be, you know, a reasonable worry, although let's hope they love their mother.
Well, indeed so. Apparently, she first got married in 1947, bless her. She was 21 at the time. Yeah. And, you're quite right. Kids are having... It's not... Do you know, when my parents retired, they said, we're going to save all the money for you, children, so you can have a better life in the future, blah, 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 blah. And I said to my mum and dad, I looked them square in the eye, I said, hey, hang on a minute. You have been working for 40 years... plus, to build this business up, you've now sold it. For goodness sake, go and enjoy life. Yes. Spend some money. And they all... And eventually, they did, and they did all the things. Because they never had a holiday when they were working at all. Well, one. They had one in their entire career time.
Oh.
And that was it. And yeah. I said to them, look, go to wherever you want to go. And they actually did. They went to see distant relatives in Canada. They went to Barbados, got invited up to the ambassadors for tea. Would you believe it? Mum and Dad would go to Saint-Tropez, pictures of Dad with the topless girls loving him when he's about 70-odd years old.
What did your mother say about that?
No, she was really made up because the girls liked her husband. Good old mum, well done.
Yeah, good for her. A lot of women wouldn't stand for
her. No, damn right, good for her. And he was very proud of the fact, because he had cancer as well had to wear a bag. And he always used to say, well, if it's good enough for Cliff Richard, it's good enough for me. And he would still go with his slightly extended trunks on and sit on the beach. All the girls would be around him. And I mean, he was a very slim gentleman, unlike me. But, the point is, it's not your money in the first place, kids. It's your mum's money, and she can do what the hell she likes with it.
Absolutely. I think you're right, of course. But, we do hear lots of terrible stories, don't we, about the children trying to, get the money maybe before it's their time, or trying to discourage their parents spending it because they eventually they've got their eyes on the inheritance. It's pretty nasty stuff. I mean, it even gets so bad that we get some examples of people being murdered. I think that there was a case quite recently where I think a daughter of about, 40 or 50 years old, she's just been put away in prison because she attempted to murder her elderly father for the money. So, it is rather terrible you know, the way people become fixated on this, and they at some point start to assume that it is their money.
Well, can I just share the message with you? Wake up, smell the coffee. It ain't your money. It belongs to other people, and they should do what the heck they flipping like with it. And to be honest, even if he was a bit of a gigolo and made the Duchess happy for the next 5 years and she died, that's got to be an amazing thing anyway.
Of course it is, absolutely. But anyway, I mean, it appears that they're all satisfied now, so I suppose that maybe she's reassured them, or maybe she's maybe sort of reserved part of her fortune for them so that they now feel less threatened. As far as I can gather from the stories, they're now, you know, pretty encouraging of the entire marriage, which must be very nice for her.
Some very dangerous news has come out from Texas, the A&M University Transport Institute. And I can't believe this has had to be done. But apparently, in America, guys, you guys over there, not all states in America have managed to yet ban the use of mobile phones whilst driving. And seriously, before I forget and get sidetracked as I am, because I'm ranting a bit this week, so I haven't been able to rant for a few weeks. A couple of 3 months ago, we reported on a young lady who had been left paralysed, and she was like 18 years old. She was innocently texting, driving down the road on her way to school. Everything was pressurising her with exams and the like. The car rolled over. It went headlong over into a field. It was crushed. And the people in America at ABC were actually helping her get a nice new house to sort of live in. And just think about it. 18 years old and her life is devastated.
Just now, texting.
I can speak so vehemently about this because my, bless his heart, Teddy, my cousin, he was 17 years old. He was as nuts as I am still, and he's still nuts about it as well, about motorbikes. Unfortunately, he went too fast around the corner, couldn't make the corner, had to go wide, and went straight into the front of a car. He was then paralysed from the neck downwards.
Really?
Now, if you can see, as I did, this flamboyant bodybuilding type big guy who used to ride on big British motorbikes sitting in a wheelchair with breathing apparatus around him, you know, the whole shooting works. You've got to see that to believe it. You really have, boys and girls. And the truth is, texting while you're driving is lunacy.
It really is, isn't it?
You know, and they tested these guys. And one of the research parts of it found that a texting driver was 11 times more likely to miss flashing lights. Now, in America and in Slovakia, because we have them here as well, the same system of traffic lights, where at night time they flash yellow or whatever, or there's, you know, they flash lights for danger on the road with the police. Oh, sorry, Mr. Policeman, I was just texting. I missed your flashing light. Oh, come on. Is it worth it? And to be honest, no one's going to thank you for an SMS message or updating your Facebook profile. It can wait 5 minutes or park the car up.
Course, absolutely right. I tell you that it happens all over the place here in Paris, and it really amazes me that on the school run, you have cars with their drivers, young drivers, and they're texting, or they're on the phone, and you know, they don't stop for you on the pedestrian crossings. They just go through, and then they suddenly realise, and as they go through, they sort of wave you, oh, very sorry, didn't see you, kind of thing. And of course, by that time, you know, you've been threatened, your children are crying. You know, what is it with these people? You know, get off the phone. Get off the text.
What did you do before there was a mobile phone?
Absolutely.
Send up smoke signals from your boot.
Yeah. I'm very pleased to see that there's new legislation planned in England now to increase the penalties for causing just injury, not death, but causing injury. While driving, and I think it could be as much as 5 years. The penalty amount is 2 years.
Six
years.
Yeah.
And, you know, great. I think it's absolutely needed.
Well, there was another bit on the final part of this study as I'm reading through it from Mr. Yeager, who was commenting on the findings.
Yeah.
Apart from the fact that texting drivers in the study were more likely to swerve across lanes, brilliant,
right.
Yeah, and marvellous, they even had participants strike barrels when they were driving. Which is incredibly scary because, you know, supplement a barrel for a human being.
Absolutely.
And instantly you've got a huge problem. So please, boys and girls, say, if not for me or Mark or for yourself, for your own family, stop texting while you're driving down the road. And if you really have got to take that phone call because you're scared the boss won't like it if you don't, tell him to put Bluetooth hands-free in your car.
Absolutely.
Or you're not breaking the law anymore.
Yeah.
And that way round, take the call briefly if you have to. Say, sorry, Governor, I can't write that down. I've got two hands on the steering wheel. And if he wants to have a pop at you for that, you have a pop back and say, Eric says. And I'll tell you what, I'll read his name out on the radio for you anywhere you like.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, we're doing some research which Mark's going to get involved in, which he doesn't know about yet, ho-ho, because we've been informed of some more dodgy dealings from timeshare people in Spain.
All right.
And we'll just call her Miss N for the moment, who's sending all the stuff over to us. Very nice to have you listening to the programme, and very nice of the fact that you've been listening for a very long time. We didn't know that. But anyway, the stuff is all coming over, because apparently now they're threatening to send in Baileys for something she didn't even buy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's one of that lot, Mark. So we're going to be revealing all within the next couple of weeks about a dodgy dealing Spanish timeshare company. Watch out.
And this is the bailiffs going in England?
Yes.
Can I, this is something that Eric wasn't expecting actually, but I'll just give a little heads up of a forthcoming bailiff documentary about to be screened on ITV1 in England, probably on the 31st of October, on the Exposure TV series. It's a Monday at 10:35. Watch it. I can tell you that the bailiff industry is already in panic.
Really? Can you repeat those details for us?
Yeah. Documentary on bailiffs, because there are a lot of questions to be asked about bailiffs. Maybe I'll talk about it more next week. I'm very pleased to say that the Consumer Action Group has been involved in providing some of the material, and the program will be screened, or it looks as if it's going to be screened, in 2 weeks' time. I think it's about 2 weeks' time on the 31st. Is that 3 weeks' time? 31st of October, Monday night, 10:35. Exposure TV.
And will you be on it?
I'm not at liberty to say.
Blimey, it's not EastEnders, you know.
I am the bailiff.
Right, okay. Okay, let's have a bit of fun on the programme for the next. Right, you have to think about the headline, boys and girls. Doggy doo-doo bags. Not doggy doo-doo bags, but doggy doo-doo bags. There is a subtle difference. Because apparently, doggy bags are part and parcel of eating out in America. But I can't say the words, but the, what shall I say, overly politically correct British diners struggle with the idea of asking for a doggy bag because they can't eat all their grub in a restaurant. Would you ask for a doggy bag?
I certainly would ask for a doggy bag. I don't have any problem about it. And I can see. I mean, I think that in some restaurants, actually, in some kinds of restaurants, it's something that's very much within the culture. But maybe people in the States are quite surprised that people in England feel that it's very bad market, very down market, very grubby to ask to take your leftover food home, because that's really what it's about. But if you go to Indian restaurants, we've got a lot of Indian restaurants, or Chinese restaurants, it's really quite normal. But I think that if you go to Italian restaurants and so forth, to ask to take out the remains of your pizza and even the remains of your spaghetti, I think people would find that very, very unusual. And people might not want to do it in order to show themselves in, not to show themselves up. I can tell you that, for instance, in France, because I'm in France and I spend most of the time at the moment in Paris, and I can tell you that in Parisian restaurants, it is never done.
Really?
And I have to say that people get very embarrassed when I'm with them and we've maybe spent 15 or 20 euros on a bottle of wine and only half of it's been drunk. And I always ask for the cork and I always take it out. And people look at me in an astonished way. And they, if you like, they try to shrug it off and they try to get rid of the embarrassment simply by explaining that I'm English. And if they didn't have that to fall back on, I can tell you they'd be very angry about it. I have to say, I do it partly because I want the value for the money and partly because I just like to wind them up.
Ah, right. Well, I'll just interject for a moment because I've just seen a text message come in, which was the bing bong that you just heard. And that was from Miss N, who will remain as Miss N for a moment. Apparently, the email has been sent to us. It's on its way. And how did she know we would do... That's scary, isn't it? In the middle of the programme, while we're just talking about her, I get an SMS from her. Spooky.
Did she in her car?
I hope not. She's in the UK somewhere. But anyway, no. See, again, this is something I find really weird, because I'm quite comfortable with the doggy bag and the doggy box.
Yeah.
And in Slovakia, it's very typical, even in a sort of four-star type restaurant, for the waiter or waitress to actually say to you, do you want a doggy bag?
Yeah.
And nobody bats an eye. You mentioned the sort of spaghetti thing. And we've got in Poprad one of the most wonderful Italian restaurants. It really is fabulous.
Yeah.
And even Italian people that come on holiday say the same thing. So that kind of says it all, really. And I was having some carbonara in there one day, and I was a bit full up and couldn't eat it all. And the first thing the waitress says, do you want a box to take it home in? They bought me a styrene box. Yeah. It was put in there so I could take it home.
Yeah.
What's wrong?
And why not? I have to say, why not? And I must say, I do think that I think people who are really sort of concerned about it and think that it's so ill-mannered or what have you, I mean, I think really they need to get a life, actually.
That's it. That works for me. Get a life, boys.
But, you know, maybe this kind of thing, maybe it is more current, say, in Eastern Europe. I mean, if people don't mind me saying, I mean, Eastern Europe has come out of a dark period where, really, you know, you would never dream of paying food or having food and throwing it away or letting it go.
No.
So, you know, maybe I'm not quite sure why it's so current in the United States, where I think the culture there is it's always been a land of plenty and it wouldn't be a problem to leave it behind. But in Eastern Europe, I can certainly see that was something that would have been grown up and would be very, very acceptable and would be almost unreasonable to dump the food. In the United Kingdom, I'm not sure quite what the problem is, but certainly...
No, we know what it is, don't you? The one sentence sums it all up.
Yeah.
No sex, please, we're British. And that kind of sums it all up, really.
Well, it might sum it up for them. I hope it doesn't sum it up for me.
Don't comment. Sorry about the voice, boys and girls, but that's why I wasn't here last week, so it keeps cracking up. I apologise. Moving along to Match of the Giants versus the Pub Landlady. And this is so funny because it's in one way it's a result for one, in one way it's a result for another. Let me explain. A pub landlady has been fighting in courts all over the place and has eventually got to the European Court of Justice because she doesn't want to pay the high fees that people like Sky Sports and ESPN charge to show, you know, top English games on a Saturday in a pub. Ironically, I can get them on Saturdays here, no problem. But that's because I don't live in England, I suppose. Anyway, Karen Murphy had to pay nearly £8,000 in fines and costs.
Yeah.
Yeah, for using a cheap...
I mean, people ought to understand, it was made into a criminal matter here.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah.
Absolutely.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, you carry on. So anyway, she got fined, and then she's been to the European Court of Justice and said, no. That's not the way it works, because if you do that, it's in breach of the sale and use of foreign goods and all that malarkey, and therefore she's quite entitled to do what she's doing, that's the way it goes. Now, the funny thing is, everybody tries to get the positives out of it, don't they? So on one hand, you've got little pub landlady winning the battle, and on the other hand, you've then got the Premier League saying... that the High Court questions were complex. We are pleased that the judgment makes it clear that the screening of pub or football matches broadcast containing protected works requires the Premier League's authorisation, because in the judgment from the European Court of Justice, it did say that things that are protected, such as any surrounding media. Now, that means like the Premier League logo that they stick up on the top corner of the screen. Mm. Any video sequences where it's got the Premier League logo in it, or any anthems or music that they use, or pre-recorded highlights, they're all works that are protected by copyright. So therefore, Karen Murphy couldn't have the telly on and show those in her pub, even though she's using the foreign decoder. However, just correct me if I'm wrong here a bit, isn't this the lunacy of the European Court of Justice? Because on one hand, they say, of course you can do it, Mrs. Murphy. On the other hand, they say, of course you can do it, Premier League. You're the bosses. Now, you know, the stupidity of all this is that all the logos and stuff. So let's imagine the programme starts at 3 o'clock. We know there's going to be a logo and an anthem and all the other paraphernalia, a bit like Formula One. Yeah. She then turns the television on 5 minutes past the hour, knowing it's all finished by then, and she gets the picture. But she's still got the logo of the Premier League in the top left-hand corner of the screen.
Naughty
lady.
Yeah.
So then she picks up the handset on a modern telly and she uses the zoom button.
Clever.
And she zooms it to the degree where the little logo has disappeared. Now, don't forget, they don't put the logo over the ball. They don't put it over Wayne Rooney when he's running down the pitch. And they certainly don't put it over the goal mouth when he scores a goal.
They may start doing that soon, mightn't they, boys and girls?
Oh, it is just a lunacy finding, because, they've tried to be, every time they do this, they try to get both sides happy. And I'm sorry, you can't. It's not going to work like that.
This is really one of the sort of, the distorted things about the European community. I mean, the whole thing about the single market, okay? I mean, that's what it's all about. The single market is the idea that if you're a producer of anything, you can have massive benefits because you benefit from economies of scale, meaning if people don't understand that instead of having to sort of, make different products for different places, what have you, you just have one factory turning them out all the same. The costs of production go right down and you make huge profits everywhere because you sell in the single market. However, and that's incidentally, that the manufacturers like that, okay? So they tip like on their Facebook page for that. But what they don't like then is that they're then not able to fragment the market. So they're then not able to sell it cheaper in Greece and rebadge it and sell it slightly more expensive in another country and sell it more expensive in England. That they won't like. So they tip that as not like for their Facebook pages. And the reason is because if you can fragment the market, then you can start charging not the value of the goods, but what the market will bear. And that's, for instance, what the Premier League's been doing. And so the Premier League here says, well, we can get away with charging this in England. So therefore, that's what we want to do. And we claim the right to do that, but we won't get away charging that in Greece. And therefore, we're obliged to sell it cheaper. And of course, this canny lady has managed to get a decoder from Greece. Mm. Well, they want their cake and eat it. Well, I think it's very unfair, and I think the single market exists for consumers. Mm-hmm. And I think that, once again, we've got huge organisation here trying to do the rest of us out of a fair deal. The Premier League do it, the banks do it, the utilities companies do it, they all do it. And I really think it's about time it was stopped. And if at the end of the day, the Premier League find a way to do this landlady out of what she's trying to do, then I think Parliament, European Parliament, needs to step in and sort it. It's the single market.
And I think I'll add to that. A lot of people will now blame Sky for it, and it ain't their fault either, because they're having to pay the money to the Premier League, which in turn is paying it to the clubs, which in turn means these Neanderthal imbeciles can earn £250,000 a week to play a game. Now, in the 1950s, if they were lucky, if they got 10 shillings, which is 50p, which is about 25 cents.
And then they can drive their supercars and text along the motorway while they go along.
Exactly. We've got so much to get through. I want to do two more stories before we finish. First one is Moody's have stepped up to the plate this morning, idiots,
yes.
And have downgraded the credit ratings of 12 UK banks, including Lloyds, TSB, RBS, Nationwide, Santander, UK. Marvellous. Wonderful. How great is that? You have no flipping idea what's going on in the UK, chaps, and yet you're just going to give all the journalists the doom and gloom details so they can tell everybody and put them into yet another panic. Great.
Well, I'm going to say, I mean, you say just, but I think that finally, in respect of the banks, somebody is telling it like it is. And I think that finally now we're starting to get a bit of honesty. We're starting to get a bit of acknowledge that, that maybe the banks have had their, you know, their great time and been bailed out. And now what's being said is, OK, guys, you banks, you're now going to start to be run more like an ordinary business, which means that if you if am I allowed to say cock it up on this?
Well, you've done it now. It's a bit late, isn't it?
Whoops, oh, blow.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you make a mistake and if you don't run your business correctly, you're not going to be bailed out by the taxpayer. Now, you know, what other kind of business? Imagine that I went to the bank and said, I want to borrow money because I want to start a business. Oh, yes, Mr. Gannon, what business is that? Well, it's a fantastic business because I'm going to make sure that I become so big that if I fail, then you, the taxpayers, are all going to bail me out. Now, would the banks lend me money for that?
I agree with that bit, Mark. Yeah, but you know, what on earth gives Moody's the right to send the whole markets into panic?
Well, I mean, nobody gives them the right, but I mean, you know, they're a respected agency and they have their analysts and they're just making economic comments and probably quite reasonable ones. And it's the rest of the markets, if they want to pay attention to them, but why should they panic? What it means is that maybe we're going to start to find that banks have to be run in a business-like manner. Well, I think that's cause for celebration. And although it may make people feel uneasy at the beginning, because of course we've got unfortunately a culture where banks think that they can get away with anything, and banks think that they can fail and they'll still get their bonuses and they'll still get bailed out, and look what it's done to us all. I mean, look at the cuts in the military, look at the cuts in the health service, look at the cuts in education, look at the cuts in the BBC, 20% cuts in the BBC. You know, this is all caused by irresponsible banking. And irresponsible banking, you know, has occurred because the banks have realised that they're not going to be allowed to go down the tubes. Well, wake up, bankers, because I think things may be about to change. And Moody's really, as I say, is just telling it like it is. I don't have a problem with this at all.
OK. Apparently 2,000 jobs, as Mark just mentioned, 20% cuts at the BBC will take place over the next 5 years.
Thank you, banks.
Yeah, marvellous. So here's the great news. BBC One is having its overall budget cut by 3%. There'll be fewer chat shows and panel shows on BBC Two. Great! Just the stuff that people want to watch, you're taking away. The digital channels, they're all digital channels, you idiots! The digital channels, I'm quoting, BBC Three and BBC Four will become feeder channels for BBC One. Great.
You know why they're called digital?
Go on.
Because you can count them on the fingers of one hand.
Yeah, right. So if you know what BBC Four's all about, have a look at it, and you can suddenly realise that if they're going to be feeding into BBC One, then BBC One is going to be a dead channel because no one's going to watch it. Interestingly, on the technology front, the BBC HD channel will close and will be replaced with a single version of BBC Two in high definition. Red Button services will also be reduced after the Olympics. You have a great future in England, boys and girls. The BBC is being clobbered, the banks are being cut, and hey, just very quickly, the Simpsons are facing a pay cut as well. The world doesn't get any better, does it,
but
Mark?
What an amazing amount of money they're earning. I mean, did you realise that apparently the each member, is it each member of the voice team of The Simpsons has been earning about $5 million per series?
Indeed, and at that point we have to say goodbye. That was Postcard from Pop Brad. See you soon, goodbye.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.